older person talking, I might be quite lost sometimes. So I wasn't sure, like, sometimes I felt like the transcript had a lot of parts that were easy to tell, like, those factors, and other times it was, like, a little bit confusing. But then overall, because this was a child, I thought to myself, like, okay, I'll rate that a bit higher or use, like, some of the more advanced structures of that.
Yeah,
I mean, but I'm not sure if that's, like, the right method.
That's an excellent question, and I haven't honestly given that as much thought as I should have. I think what we want to do is we want to maintain the standards, the anchor points of each of the scales, and just assume that as a child, this child is going to score lower than an adult would. I don't think we want to make accommodations for the child, in other words. So, like, you know, well, he's only a child, so we wouldn't expect as much social causality. So I'm actually going to score him higher than I would an adult because he's a child. I don't think we want to do that. We want to maintain the anchor points. And yes, he's a child, so we would automatically realize he's probably going to get lower ratings. I would just make a blanket statement here. Probably this kid's never going to get, if we were doing the scores G, this kid would never get a 7 and probably never get a 6 in his entire therapy life, the entire treatment,
right?
Because he's only a kid. So I know I trained you all on the full range of possibilities from 1 to 7 on each of the 8 scales. But I think that the likelihood is that this kid would never get above a 5 on anything ever. So we're already restricting the range of the anchor points for each scale just because of his age. You know, unfortunately, there is no child scores. Like, there's a PQS and a CPQ. The PQS is the adult version of the CPQ. CPQ is the child psychotherapy process Q-set. The PQS is the psychotherapy process Q-set. And the items are organized and created specifically for adults in the PQS, and the items are specifically designed for children in child psychotherapy in the CPQ. Well, for the scores, there's only an adult scores. You know, I don't have the time or the sample size or anything like that to create my own scores C, you know, the child version of the scores. I mean, that might be a dissertation for somebody, but so we're saddled with using the adult scores because that's the only one available. But I think what we'll do is we won't we won't in our heads adjust our ratings because we know this is a kid. I think if we do that, we're going to be all over the place. We should stick with what we have and use the anchor points as they're written. And it's just too bad for this kid. He's just never going to achieve a 6 or a 7, probably.
Okay, that helps me out a lot. Thank you.
Yeah, that helps me too. I didn't really put that together, but that's a very good point. So that's a doctoral level comment, Elisa.
I try.
All right. Any other questions or specific items that you want to talk about? All right. We will go to the main event. If I can find it. Okay, so this is the template that we're going to be using for the rest of our training together. It's going to look just like this. So in the left column are going to be the item numbers from 1 to 93. Second column is the standard deviation of that item. So the higher the standard deviation, that means the higher the disagreement among all of you. And so I also told SPSS to sort the cases in descending order using this variable as the sorter. And so what we have here is they're perfectly sequenced. And it's quite long. So then keep going down here. And I know it's a long document. And you keep going. And so the lower the number, the more agreement there is. And so here, items 1, 17, 56, 57, 59, 60, 68, 70, 75, 77, that's 10 items, I think. Everybody was perfect. So there were 10 items, 10 of the 93 where everybody matched perfectly. And interestingly, the score was 1. The rating was 1 for everybody. And then when we go to item 90, the standard deviation was 0.28. I'm going to assume that like one person was off by 1. But we go all the way up then to the standard deviation of 2.86. So that was the highest standard deviation. That means there's the most disagreement. And I figured to conserve our time, you know, we should talk about the items on which everybody's the most discrepant, because we want to be able to pull everybody together and view it in a unified manner. Everybody should view all these items very similarly. So item 87, let's see what item 87 is.
I can read them off if you want me to.
Well, can everybody see that?
We see the same thing that you had on.
Okay, so you're not seeing a word.
Share screen rather than window. Let me try this.
Can you see that? Taylor?
Yes, we can.
Okay, so 87 is here. And identity seems to revolve around a cause without which he or she would feel unimportant, alone, or without a sense of self or purpose, may become extremely committed to a cause that serves as an extension of self, permits maintenance of a coherent sense of self, or provides desperately needed self-definition. Do not score simply for strong value commitments. And this is I-23, meaning that the I is the identity variable, identity and coherence of self, what we used to be known as ICS, identity and coherence of self. And this number here, the 2, means this is on the low end of identity, on the lower end of things. And the 3 is just, it's the third example of a level 2 ICS item. So I'm trying to situate the item in your long-term memory where you could place it easily in the training that you've received. Now, ICS, I think, is a inherently difficult dimension to score. I said that already in the past, and so it's not too surprising to me that a lot of people had different opinions about where to place item 87. So when we go back to the PDF, can you see that, or do I have to stop share again and reshare? Does everybody see the standard deviations?
No, you can share the screen instead of the window. So then wherever you go on your screen, it'll show.
How do I do that?
There's an option of share screen rather than clicking on the specific window.
Okay, I thought that's what I did. I'm just going to stop share. Share screen again.
So when you press share screen, go to share doc, share desktop. That'll show your whole desktop. Unless there's anything super confidential that you don't want us to see, but whatever you pull up, we'll see that whole like process of pulling up different documents.
Yeah, I don't see share desktop.
There's the it's the first option. Like on the top, when you press share screen, the first to the left, the top left of all the options, there's desktop one, whiteboard, Microsoft Word.
I see screen, whiteboard, iPhone, iPad.
Okay, screen will be it for you.
Screen, okay.
Yes.
Can you see that?
Yeah. We see it, and if you do click on a different document, we should be able to see you click on a different document.
Oh, okay. Thank you. I did not know that. All right.
Yeah, no problem.
So here we have the item 87 that I just read. We have the very high standard deviation, and here are the actual ratings. So Mel put it in pile 8. Andy put it in 7. Brian put it in 7. So you three are at least reliable with each other. So we keep going. Wait a minute. Yeah, I guess this would be the same. Okay. So Elisa put it in 4, which would be discrepant from the first three. And then Taylor put it in 8, which would be fine. Eli put it in 1. So he felt it wasn't relevant at all. Same with Teresa. Rachel put it in 8. Sorrel put it in 8. Lexi put it in 7. And Lexi's the honorary gold standard today. So I'm going to assume that it should be in a higher pile rather than a lower pile. Myra put it in 2. Jeremy put it in 5. Mindy put it in 2. So you guys want to discuss this item? What do you guys think?
I think this item relates back to what I was like talking about. Like it says that, you know, identity seems to revolve around a cause, which I definitely would see for this like transcript. However, because this is a child, I don't think that that's the only piece of her identity or their identity in this, like in a general. I guess like that was something that was harped on, but I don't think it was an identity thing. I think it was just at the moment that was described a lot and talked about a lot. But I think because it was a child, it was harder to code. Because if an adult was talking about the topic as often, I think it definitely was a piece of their identity. Whereas looking at it here, I think it's just children seem to perseverate on things that are happening right then and there.
If you
hear what you're saying, like it was Earth Day, so they were very preoccupied with Earth and saving the environment and recycling and the cause and cleaning beaches so everyone can swim. And I think that's what makes it tricky, the identity part. Because a kid would be like excited about Earth Day and talking about that a lot in a session, whereas an adult, it would be a lot to talk about that in one session in a mature mind.
So what if you, let's say you were living in another world and you read this session and you just assumed that the patient was an adult. Where would you rate this item then?
For me, I gave it a 7 because not necessarily because of the Earth Day part, like, but like this preoccupation with fair and unfair and like what's your, like, so the fairness aspect, like that dedication to that cause, that's why I rated it. Almost like very high, like not 8, but very highly. So I think, yeah. So I don't think that the Earth Day part, I can see why people would think that. But even if it was an adult, they could have this preoccupation with right and wrong in like a very rigid way.
I agree. And I feel like the session, like the most salient part of it was like him expressing his identity through being this helper and like also like showing how there were other people and other toys who weren't the helper. And then there was only one person who was the helper who he identified with. And I feel like without that piece of the play, like there was no identity.
Just, I can reveal now because you've coded this session. This is a girl.
Okay. Did I say a boy?
Yeah, you did.
That's what me and Lexi thought.
Yeah. And you know, it said her or she at some point, but for whatever reason, when I was reading the session, my brain kept picturing like a little boy.
Interesting. Yeah, mm-hmm. So these practice sessions are not the... They're not in any way related to the case that you're going to be coding for real, okay? Just to throw that out there. These are other folks who I have transcripts on that you will be training on, but so be careful the assumptions you make. But they are children, okay? But I think that the best way to go forward with our reliability training, you know, our goal is to try to get everybody on the same page. And I think the way to do that is to assume that you're coding an adult, even though you know it's a child. And so we're gonna hold the standards constant, the anchor points constant. And so we will be rating a child on an adult rating scale, which means that there's gonna be a lower ceiling of ratings, right? The ceiling would be 7 with an adult, but multiple kids are gonna be coding in practice here. These kids are not going to be, you know, achieving the ceiling that we would expect from an adult. So all that training that we did on 6s and 7s is not going to be applicable probably with these kids. I'm just putting it out there. So we've now shrunk a 7-point scale into really more of a 5-point scale. But I don't want you to make allowances or adjustments to your scoring because you know it's a child. And if only this kid were older, he or she would score higher. So I'm going to give him or her a higher score. Please don't do that. I think if we can just all agree to pretend that these patients are adults and treat them like adults in the coding for purposes of coding, I think we're all going to get much more reliable scores in the future moving forward. What do you think, Brian?
I think that's a good plan.
All right.
Not too much to add on that, but yeah, I think that works.
Okay. But I think...
I just have a quick question.
Yeah, sure.
So if we're coding as if they're an adult, like what do we do about the items that involve like romantic relationships and things that we wouldn't know about for a kid?
Yeah, no, that's these are the questions I'm expecting to get. So these are great questions. So romantic relationships, you could substitute parental relationships, friendships in the school setting, on the playground, you know, so any kind of, I think, close, I'm going to substitute romantic relationships for close personal relationships. When I mean close, I mean like best friend close or like parent close. Because, you know, there's a school of thought that believes that romantic relationships are really nothing more than close parental relationships with sex added on top, you know? So I think that we can go with that. Does that make sense?
So, yeah, perfect.
So this is exactly the kind of conversation that I was expecting, that we kind of dig in here and see what works and what doesn't work. But I fully appreciate the conversation about, this is a child, this isn't an adult. How do we adjust? Well, we don't adjust. That's part of the problem of not having a child scores. And as I said, if someone wants to tackle that for a dissertation, that would be an incredible contribution to the literature, I think.
I'll add this too, because now that I've thought about it a little bit, I think that I agree with Dr. Goodman and just want to add, the second we start trying to change the scores because we know something about the person, it's going to throw off everything. Like, hypothetically, if this was an autistic adult, you could see very similar conversations, and you wouldn't expect, like, an adult with autism to have, you know, some of these moral values and such. So I think that if we are just taking everything at face value, that, like, this is what they're thinking, then I think that everything will be much more consistent across the board.
Absolutely. You know, and go ahead.
No, I just have another question. So maybe Brian has kind of answered this, but for one of the items that said that they offer confusing explanations of something, so I can imagine a confusing explanation that a child would give that, like, wasn't confusing because they were a child, but it would have been if they were an adult. Like,
yeah. Simplistic. Yeah. So you want to hold their feet to the fire. That's confusing. Don't make any allowances because you know in your head it's a child. You know, I've already given you that information. Maybe I shouldn't have, but I mean, you would guess it in one session anyway that it was a child patient.
Rick, are you talking about, like, if a child said something that was, like, considered weird? Like, if an adult said, like, I'm trying to think of an example, but you know where I'm coming from, right? Like, there are things that a child would say that wouldn't be weird, and there would be things that adults would say that would be weird.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Like a ghost prevented me from going to school today?
No, I think that's weird regardless. But, like, I know what you're saying. Like, you're saying, like mommy and daddy helped me bathe. Like, if an adult said that, like, that'd be weird. But if a child said that, like a four-year-old, that might still be age appropriate. Like, something like that is what you're talking about?
Yeah, something that's more simplistic that would be very appropriate for a child.
So this is where I think context matters the most, is that, because given, if you're having a conversation with a child, that, like, child-centered question is going to make sense in terms of the conversation with the child. So I would say, given the conversation, regardless of adult or child, if it makes sense in the conversation, you're probably safe. And if it doesn't make in the conversation, regardless of age, then I would score that accordingly.
How's that sound, Myra? Does that make sense? Okay. You know, everything that we're talking about, we really sort of go into a code book that we could use. And I don't know, Brian, if you want to start, like, a little code book.
I've been jotting some things down.
Thank you. Thank you, Taylor. I know when we were working on the, the CCQ, when we were using that in research, that Olivia had created a code book for that. You remember that? So, occasionally we do create code books to just serve as reminders of, like, little rules that we've made along the way. You know, I have a whole book here that, you know, we used in training. But it's for the scores G, you know, and it has a lot of great tidbits. And I hope everybody read the effective strategies chapter. I think that's a really important chapter to read. It kind of ties everything together that we had learned up until this point. But we're now using a slightly different system called the scores Q. And there's no book written on the scores Q. In fact, I gave you the PDF that exists about the scores Q. There's nothing else about it. So we need to supplement what we know about this coding system with what we're learning about it now. And especially, you know, applying it to a child. As far as I know, that's never been done before. So, you know, I appreciate Elise's original question, which led to all this discussion. This is really important stuff. And so that same issue comes up when we talk about romantic relationships or, you know, the context of what a kid might say versus an adult. But it's just going to go better for us if we can pretend that we're coding an adult as much as we can, to pretend that as much as possible anyway. I think with some sessions, it's going to be easier than other sessions to make that, to really code in pretense rather than code in reality. And now if we had a child adjusted coding system, you know, we wouldn't have to do that. We could accommodate what we know about the child in our coding, but we don't have that. All right. You are on the cutting edge of the Q sorting field, Jeremy. How does it feel?
Feels great. Gonna write in my memoir.
Right. You're gonna call it Q-spiracies or something like that.
Q-spiracies, I like it.
Sort of an allusion to our skit last spring. First years don't know anything about that. So anyway, I think we can go on to. I'm already feeling really positive that you guys are gonna crush it next week, but let's go on to the next. So item 53, the standard deviation was 2.80. Mel put it in pile 8, Andy in pile 2. That's really very significant difference. Brian in pile 1. Elisa in pile 5, Taylor pile 2, Eli in pile 8, Teresa pile 7, Rachel in pile 2. Seems like it was either really low or really highly scored. Sorrel in pile 7, Lexi pile 7, Myrov in pile 8, Jeremy in pile 3, Mindy in pile 8. There's really no middle ground with this item. People have very strong feelings about this item. I'm dying to see what it is. Let me pull that up. What did I say? 50 what?
53.
Thank you. So here we are. This is from the complexity of representations of people, right? That's C. You had done you had created a legend, Taylor. Is that correct for the legend?
It is not.
It is not. Okay. I think I.
But close. Close. This is C is understanding social causality.
Okay, so C is SC. Thank you for that clarification. I don't have these new labels memorized. Tends to understand interpersonal interactions in sensible but relatively elementary ways. Score where subject offers understandable but incomplete or simplified narratives, or where subject tends to view people's behavior as caused by environmental events or simple intentions rather than by inner thoughts, feelings, or meanings. For example, I got into a fight with Jane because I was in a bad mood that day. Or I confronted him because he was talking behind my back. Not because, you know, I got into a fight with my parents earlier this morning and I felt guilty about what I said to them and I took out on this kid on the playground. You know, that's a lot more sophisticated. So this is social causality level 2. So it's a fairly low level item. And this is the second example of a level 2 social causality item. All right, so think about the transcript. And I actually have the transcript on my desktop here. So if you want to actually refer back to specific statements that the patient has made, I can pull up the transcript as well if you want to support your argument or whatever. Taylor is always very good at taking notes. And am I right, Taylor?
Yeah.
she.
I just want to make sure that that was social causality. It sounded like it. I'm just going to double check that one.
It does sound like it. I think I added your legend at the bottom here. Let me just check. Yes, I added what you wrote. C is, yes, social causality right there.
Yeah, so, I just want to double check that my legend is right.
Okay.
But we can move on for now and I'll let you guys know.
All right, thanks. So, let me pull up. There we go. So who wants to start? People thought that either this was really not characteristic or very characteristic of this patient. Nobody was really nobody was really neutral about this case, about this item.
I can start.
Yeah.
So I think I put this at a 7, but I think I put it high. So I feel like when the child was describing her like confrontations with people, she would be like, I told Jane, I told her that I told her my feelings because she was being mean and that made me sad. And I felt like that was kind of very, like, it was saying simplistic, and there wasn't much more sophisticated thought behind her feelings. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah. And where did you...
I would agree. I think like that, I know I put it like as a 5, I think you said, but I think that like the way that she 7. Described how people did things, like I know there was one girl who, her like friend Brooke, I think, who was always like afraid. And she just kept saying always afraid, but never like why she was afraid or anything else. It was just that like describing peace. Mm-hmm.
So we've heard compelling arguments from the high scoring crowd. Any arguments that anyone wants to mount from the low scoring crowd?
I think I put it low because when she made, when she separated the people, I felt it was more of they are either good or they are bad, but she didn't have attribute any meanings behind them. Like she didn't go beyond good or bad. So like she didn't understand more about it, which is why I put it in a more lower pile.
All right, well, wouldn't that fit in with this? I got into a fight with Jane because I was in a bad mood that day. So it's a rather simplified, I am feeling bad, therefore I did something bad. I got into a fight. Isn't that rather an incomplete or simplified narrative to categorize people as all good or all bad?
Yeah, I guess.
I mean, you don't have to put it in a pile 8. You can put it in 7.
Yeah, I'd go up to 7.
Well, that was easy. Jeremy usually provide a little more resistance than that.
I was trying to find where. I thought the therapist asked, questioned about what was the interact, why this person act this way. And I thought the client said, I'm not sure, but I can't find it in the transcript.
Okay. Would you guys like me to pull up the transcript? Can't find it. Here we go. Anything you want me to look at, look for? I can actually do a search feature. We can find keywords.
Search for Brooke, because I think there was a lot in that example for either end that would just help us pinpoint where to look.
Search for what?
Brooke.
Brooke?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Is that it?
Yeah. So, Jeremy, I'm wondering if even in this section, like, the therapist was like, what happened? And then maybe this is where the client said, I don't know.
I just realized I was looking at this week's transcript rather than last week's transcript.
Oh, I just sent it today.
Yeah. Not while I was coding, while I was trying to look for examples.
Okay.
Back up. Yeah, no.
That would have been quite a feat to code a transcript you had not yet received. I'd want to know how you did that.
I'm just that good.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, this is the...
Well, I actually see something that might be helpful.
Yeah.
So I actually put in 8. So, like, I put it the most extreme.
Yep.
But where you have highlighted Brooke, like the client's talking about why Brooke's afraid and explains some things. And if you keep going down, the therapist goes, and that's not fair to her because why not? Mm-hmm. And then the client goes, I don't know. She's like really afraid. And I tell her. So I don't know. Maybe that's good for us to look at.
Well, yeah. She doesn't know. She can't project into Brooke's mind and try to figure out why she might be afraid. She doesn't have that wherewithal. Which I think is what this item is really getting at. It's a low-level social causality, and I think it should be rated highly.
Yeah, me too.
I don't.
Sorry, Jeremy.
I mean, maybe.
No, that makes sense.
No, but maybe not. An 8 might be too high, but you know, a 7 or a 6, I could see that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'll just tell you, because you know we're not going to be coding this particular patient anymore. But she has borderline personality disorder. And so what's a feature of patients with borderline personality disorder? They have very low social causality skills, right? Low mentalization, which is a very similar construct. So we would expect her to have, you know, low social causality skills. And so this particular item would be rated highly because it's a low-level social causality item. Sorrel.
Dr. Goodman.
Yes.
I rated it highly, but I'm wondering, like, maybe Jeremy's thinking she didn't even deserve that. Like, it's worse.
Okay. So I hear what you're saying, but this... So let's say she really scores most highly with a C1, right? So the C1s would get pushed all the way over to 8, but the C2s would be scored fairly highly anyway because she's still in the neighborhood of this kind of level of social causality thinking. You know
but
what I'm saying?
What if, like, it's not sensible? Like, the word sensible is in the item. So it seems weird, like, if their perspective is totally not sensible, it seems weird that it be rated highly.
That's a good point. Let's go back to the item itself. Now, where do you see the word sensible? I don't see it. Here it is. Yeah, I found it. Tends to understand interpersonal interactions in sensible but relatively elementary ways. Well, did you feel, Sorrel, that this patient was, their social causality skills were basically nonsensible?
No, I rated it highly. I'm just kind of thinking of a hypothetical situation.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah, so if their social causality is horrible and it doesn't make any sense, like a ghost kept me from school today, then maybe this would be rated on a lower, at a lower level. Because this item is restricted to sensible understandings of interpersonal interactions. All right.
Dr. Goodman.
Yes.
Is this patient the patient that you were talking about in class on Tuesday that you diagnosed as borderline?
Yes, it is. I knew somebody was going to make that connection.
That's so funny.
This is she. She was 8 years old, and we diagnosed her with borderline personality disorder because it was very stable. She had manifested the criteria over a period greater than a year. So we did assign that diagnosis to her. So this is she, but I think this session would warrant scoring this item at a higher level, probably a 7 out of 8. Any other discussion about this particular item?
Yeah, I put it as a 2. So I guess I think I wasn't looking at the first number. And when you say that the number it was rated like a 2, so pretty low for social causality, that helps. I don't know. I wasn't taking that into account. I was just reading the description. So I think that going forward, it will help if I identify where it falls on the scale that we've learned. And then post it accordingly.
Right. So, that's a good point. So let me just review again. There's a little after every one of these items, and it's also in your actual Trello account, the same parentheses after every item. There's a little initial or a couple of initials. And so actually, in the document that I sent you, the text document, all these items are actually in order. So like item 53 is social causality. And then the second number is the level, so level 2. And then the third number is the second example. So the first example is the one right above it. This is also social causality level 2, but this is the first example. So these two items, 52 and 53, are very similar. They're the same dimension, and they're at the same level, but they're two different. They might capture slightly different aspects of being a level 2 social causality.
And rating. It goes from 0 to 5.
Which means that there would be 6 levels, and I know you were trained on 7 levels, so okay. I wouldn't take it as like this level 0 means it's level 1. It probably is, but okay. You just want to be careful there that this is not exactly the same as the score is G.
So but you're just know it's lower. I would know
yes,
it's
exactly. More, so more so exactly. So level 0, 1, and 2 are going to be fairly low social causality, and then levels 3, 4, and 5. This one doesn't have a 5 actually, but there is a level 5. I've seen it. Okay. Are going to be higher levels of social causality.
Thank you. That makes sense.
All right. And I'm pretty sure there were 5s. Maybe not.
But like 48, 47 have 9.
48, 47. Yeah, I think that's actually an error. Not my error. It's Drew Weston's error. That should be a 5, but yeah, you're correct. So that would be an example of a 5, and it goes from 0 to 5. So that gives you 6 levels to work with. It's not 7, but it's close enough. And, so basically what I'm saying because you know, this is a child, that anything that's this like the V91, V92, which is really V51, V52, and even the fours, it's going to be very unlikely that this kid is going to accomplish, you know, is going to meet the criteria for those items. So you know automatically that anything with a four or five is most likely going to be scored in either the one or the two pile in your Trello account. It's like I'm giving you the answers to the test. I mean, this should help us a lot with reliability. So because the range is attenuated now, it's restricted because it's a kid. So it's you have fewer opportunities to go wrong. Right? So I mean, if I had a seven-sided coin and I asked you to guess which side was going to come up, you'd guess it right one in seven times. If I had a two-sided coin and I asked you to guess heads or tails, you'd have a 50-50 chance of being right. So when we restrict the range, we automatically increase the probability that reliability is going to be higher. So, you know, thank you, Andy, for pointing that out. And I think if people are just aware of this little hint at the end of each item, that should help you a lot in figuring out where these items belong. So, you know, I wouldn't call it a rule. So Taylor, when you write the code book, I wouldn't actually say this emphatically, but it's going to be rare. You should use these fours and fives sparingly. If you're going to rate it higher than a one, you should really be careful with that and just think it through before you actually rate the fours and fives higher than a one or a two. Because chances are they're not going to belong. You know, the practice items or the practice transcripts that we're going to be doing are all children. They're not adolescents. I'll just give you that information right off the bat. And also the real sample, the real kid whom we're going to be really coding for real. How many times can I use the word real? Is a child as well. He or she is not an adolescent. So same rule applies. The fours and fives, if you're thinking about anything higher than a one or two, you should really think it through very carefully. All right, thank you, Andy. Any other questions? I think we've really learned a lot, I think, in this lab meeting today, and I'm so grateful I remembered to record it. So we have it for posterity, but I'm really excited because I think due to the discussions that we've had, you guys are all going to really jam on the next one. I just have a good feeling about it. Any other quick questions before we end? I did not bring up, I got so caught up in this new scores queue and teaching it that I forgot. Any further thoughts about the poster? Crickets. I know we had some people who were thinking. I know Brian was thinking about something. Mel was thinking about something. And then there was a third. Was it Andy who was thinking about something as well? Am I right? Did I identify the correct three people? Yeah. Yes. Okay. So how are we doing with our thoughts? You want to share them at all, or are they still germinating? We have until December 17th to write an abstract. Today's November 18th. So by my calculations, that means we have a month. We have 1 month. And I know that finals are right around that corner, right around that proverbial corner. So it's a good time to work on something now. And I think the place to start is to formulate a hypothesis based on the data sets that we've already collected on this case. I have shared with you the data that we already have coded on this case, this treatment, and how can we create or formulate a hypothesis that might incorporate one or more of the other data sets? That's the question. I also want to make sure people are aware that we can sponsor more than one poster. We don't have to sponsor just one poster. We have done that in the past. We haven't done it. We didn't do it last year or the year before, but we have done it in the past where we've sponsored two posters from this lab. So like if Brian wants to write one up and Andy wants to write one up, you know, and Mel wants to write one up, that's fine. But all of us, everybody in this room should be helping everybody out. And all our names will get on all the posters. So you have three posters on your CV rather than one. And in academia anyway, more is better. So be thinking about that. If we want to sponsor more than one, we can certainly do that. But I think it's time that people start sending me actual hypotheses to formulate so that I can review them and give you feedback and actually tell you whether they're viable or not. Any questions? Brian, you want to add anything?
I think that this is a really good opportunity, especially for first and second year, especially considering the amount of work you'd have to put into this poster minus other posters, most likely. Like I said, I have no problem taking it on, but just because I am working on another project, I'm tempted to take a back seat. But I do highly recommend that, you know, if you are interested in a career in academia, that you take this opportunity if possible.
Well, I would also add that I think even internships look at whether you're productive with posters and so forth. And, you know, are you a motivated person? And I think one of the ways that internships review a student's level of motivation, just in general, you know, a general motivation factor, is whether you've participated in research, you've written a poster, or you've presented at a conference. They want to see activity, professional activity, just in general. So even if you have no interest at all in going into academia, it still could help you getting a prized internship site slot. And I, needless to say, with the massive class size that we have now, especially in the first year class, but also in the second year class, Myrov is giving a woo-hoo-hoo. You know, given the massive class size, you're going to have to distinguish yourself from your classmates and from other competitors in the New York City area, especially if you're applying in the tri-state area. If you're applying outside the tri-state area, it's not a problem. But if you want to stay local, you're competing with your classmates, unfortunately, for internship slots. And what's going to make you stand out? You know, a poster, having your name on a poster or more than one poster. So those are all things to consider. So I'm hoping to get things to read from people, hypotheses to read and critique between now and next week. I'm not going away. I'm going to keep bringing it up until December 17th. So it's going to be a broken record. You guys don't know where...
Next week, I'm assuming we're not meeting because of Thanksgiving.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Exactly. So I won't see you in 2 weeks. So this assignment you can do over 2 weeks, the next transcript to code. So you'll have 2 weeks to do it. I wish everybody a very happy Thanksgiving, and I hope to see you all refreshed in a couple of weeks. All right?
Happy holiday.
Yeah, you too. All right. Bye-bye, everybody.
Thank you.
Sure. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thank you.